This week in Retronauts, you've been asking for it. You've been begging for it. You've been on your knees, prostrating yourselves, saying, Stuart, please, when are you going to do it? When? Please, please, I've been waiting so long. I've given up so much. Please, Stuart, when? But now, at last, it's tale time. Hello, I'm Stuart Gipp, and as I said earlier in the very, very long intro, it is in fact tale time. And you know what that means? It means we're talking about Gex, finally. And at the time of recording, I've got COVID. Now, you wouldn't know it because I've put on my exciting, enthusiast radio-ish voice to do this. But in reality, I feel like I'm going to die in like 5 seconds. So before that happens, I think we'll introduce the fine Gexeteers who are with us today. Let's start with, let's go at random and see who answers.
Right, I just start. I'm Thomas Nickel, and I currently feel like I'm trapped in Boy George's pants.
Oh, God.
And hi, I'm John Linneman again, here to talk more platform games, because we've become kind of a trio for talking weird, obscure platform games that aren't Nintendo made.
Yeah, and I wouldn't have it any other way. This is what I want. I want to have these little niches, and I want these little crews where we cover all of the different things that tickle my nipples. Now, Gex, of course, slightly relevant because Limited Run Games recently announced that the Gex trilogy is coming to Carbon Engine, which is something I don't know a huge amount about, but all I know is that it means we're getting Gex back. So I guess that's an emulation kind of thing. Do you know about the Carbon Engine?
Oh, yeah. It's a custom emulation thing that they have a team working on there where they're sort of building from the ground up brand new emulators, trying to create really optimal versions of games.
Right,
but also,
right.
It's not just the emulation, it's also the whole package around it.
Right,
you know, really nice menu systems and basically presenting the games in the best way possible. That's the goal.
Is there anything out on the market yet in that engine that I'm just not realizing is in that engine?
Yeah, there's definitely some stuff out there.
Yeah, there's Shantae, for example, right?
Oh, Shantae, the game we call Shantae, yes, that was one, was it?
Okay. That's one. There's the River City Gear Zero, as they called it, which was one of the
yes, of course, games. Yes.
And then, of course, they wouldn't want you to know it, but Bill and Ted.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, I don't see why they wouldn't want you to know it when Bill and Ted's Excellent Game Boy Adventure is one of the finest games on the system.
You know I'm not joking when I say that.
I love that game. It's like Manic Miner, except, like, much better controls.
It's certainly better than the Atari Lynx version of Bill and Ted.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? Now, final question. Does Need for Speed Carbon run in the Carbon Engine?
No.
Thank you.
Unrelated.
Okay, that's good to know. Now, I guess the best place to start would be, I'll start with you, Thomas, I think. I'd like to know what your personal Gex experience is.
Well, so what can I say about Gex? I read about Gex in magazines back in the day when it was covered on 3DO, which was, of course, a system I couldn't even dream to afford back then.
Oh, God, no, yeah.
I mean, the thing was hideously expensive. And then when it came to PlayStation, finally, I ignored it completely, and I later on bought the PlayStation version of the second Gex game, which was pretty neat, especially since I didn't have an N64 to play other 3D platformers. So I come in basically in the middle of the big, epic Gex trilogy.
Yeah, and for me, I kind of played... So I also followed the game in magazines. I first played it on 3DO at my friend Chris's house, who actually had a 3DO.
Wow, shout out to Chris.
Yeah, but then I ended up getting it first, weirdly enough, on Windows 95 for the PC, which was a Microsoft-published game. Weirdly enough. But then, you know, I went on to play it on PlayStation a bit later after that, and eventually Saturn as well. So I played all the different versions of Gex multiple times. It's a tough game. For the sequel, though, Enter the Gecko, I got into that actually first in the PC when I got a 3DFX Voodoo card.
Oh, is it one of those games that like really specifically needs that card to run?
I can't remember. I think it might work in Direct3D, but it came with... in a bundle with my Diamond. I got a Diamond Monster 3D card at a computer trade show, and the guy tossed in a couple games with it, and Gex, Enter the Gecko was one of them. that's how I first played it. And, you know, being a Mario 64 fan, I was like, wow, this is like, you know, actually having a 3D platform on the PC that wasn't Croc, even though I don't hate Croc.
Yeah.
This felt much more like, you know, open-ended and impressive at the time.
It's definitely I also like Croc, but it's definitely more impressive than Croc in terms of technology, in terms of like freedom.
Oh yeah.
My experience with this game is quite typical of me, to be honest, which is that I didn't have it, but I did have the strategy guide for Gex, because there was this book sale right near my house that used to get remaindered books and strategy guides for games that nobody bought, like the 3DO Gex. They tended to turn up quite a lot, so I still have this huge collection of old strategy guides that I really should value because it's probably quite valuable.
So there is a review. There is a hint book, book for Gex and 3DO. How about
For the original, I think it covers the other systems as well. But yeah, there is a big strategy guide, like full color, like Primer guide for it, and Primer. I never knew if it was Prima or Primer. But yeah, I used to look at that because, you know, because I didn't have any games. I'd like to go through these books and just like be like vicariously play these games. And eventually I got to play Deep Cover Gecko, which is the third Gex game. But I'd been following them in magazines the entire time, which was essentially until kind of emulation became a going concern. That was how I pretty much followed all games that weren't on the Sega Master System. So yeah, love Deep Cover Gecko. When I went back to play the other ones, I enjoyed them as well. I like Deep Cover. Sorry, that's what I just said. I always get them mixed up. Enter the Gecko, Deep Cover Gecko. Enter was good fun. And the original Gex, I think it has some appeal, but we'll talk about it, you know. I don't hate it, but I don't think it's that good. So I guess we're going to get into it. And I think that might be a good clue to actually do just that.
Indeed. So we should kick off with that original Gex, obviously, because this is where the party started, and its story is an interesting one. So yeah. It begins with Crystal Dynamics. You guys know Crystal Dynamics, right?
Like, yeah, absolutely. Tomb Raider?
Yeah, they've been making Tomb Raider games since taking it over from Core Design after Angel of Darkness.
Yeah.
And they did a good job as well.
Yeah, they also did the Avengers, as I call it, which is the knockoff Avengers game. That
Les Avengers, you mean?
Les Avengers. Ben oui.
Did they do Legacy of Kain, or am I completely miss...
They absolutely did. Okay. Well, they did Soul Reaver specifically.
Yeah. Not the first one.
No, right. But they published the first one.
Yeah.
But all of this is getting ahead of the horse here.
Yes, it is.
Sure.
Getting ahead of the gecko.
Crystal Dynamics was kind of spun off as a company, started up specifically to create 3DO software, right? Mm. Like, that was their objective, and that's what they did. And in fact, that's really important because they had the one and only launch title for 3DO, which was Crash and Burn. Now imagine this, like this 3DO launches in 93. It's like $699 US, and it has exactly one game, and it's a racing game from Crystal Dynamics, which is a brand new company.
Yeah.
Now Crash and Burn is actually a very decent little game, but when you're spending that kind of money, it's very slight.
Yes.
To say the least.
It's odd to think about how consoles did launch with so few games back in the day. Like, nowadays, they'd want like 20 games on the shelf, like, surely by minimum, I would have thought.
Absolutely. But, you need a lot of games. Back then, I mean, honestly, even by 1993 standards, it was pretty low. Like, you know, Super NES, Genesis, they all launched with at least more than one game. And the Jaguar launched with three, but it may as well have been zero, given how bad they were.
Yeah, I remember the Nintendo 64 launching with not that many, but I might be completely misremembering that.
You're right.
What like that? What's three games?
Yeah.
But it was Mario 64 in there, right?
So yeah, like, the game which is many games.
Crash and Burn is not Mario 64.
It's not. It's almost as good, but not quite.
Needless to say, though, that did actually put Crystal Dynamics on the map, and they continue to work on 3DO games. So they would release Total Eclipse and Offworld Interceptor next in 94, as well as something called The Horde, which was a strategy game.
I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, pretty good.
But outside of The Horde, I guess they were mostly focused on 3D graphics. But at the time, bubbling in the background, starting right with the company, was a little thing called Gex. And a ragtag team got together let's see, there's like Mira Ross, Suzanne Daugherty, Lyle Hall, and the lead programmer. Looking at his blog actually on it here. So, and the thing is like they wanted to make a new mascot game for the 3DO because in 93 mascots were still big, right? Sonic was still it was relatively new, you know, 91, 93, not a big difference. And that's kind of what gamers still felt that consoles needed. And there was this race. It's the mascot wars, which is something I'd like to talk about in more detail at some point.
Oh, I'd be happy to do that. You know me, I love my mascots.
Yeah, right? I mean, Arrow the Acrobat. Hell yeah, Bubsy, they're an acrobat. There's Hermie, you know, Sparkster.
Hermie Hopperhead, absolutely peak. Woody Wombat.
Those were late, though. That was
awesome. Possum. Awesome Possum. Don't forget awesome about Possum that guy. Awesome
Possum was an attempt.
He's not... The Awesome Possum bothers me because... there's a voice clip of the villain saying, like, you're not so awesome, and he's right. Like, you can't disagree with him. The villain is just objectively correct. He's not he so is. Awesome.
Exactly.
You only run at less than 30 frames per second, Awesome Possum. You suck.
But Gex, though, is awesome. Though yes, it started out in kind of a weird situation. So from what I can tell, it seems like they couldn't initially figure out what they wanted Gex to be. Like, at one point, he was like a stunt gecko known as Gecko X and was tasked with, like, turning profits around for some like Hollywood studio.
Jesus.
And that meant he'd have to go into different levels. Like you choose like levels based on themes. Like there's a Western cowboy movie and you have to like, you know, fix their problems there. And it was super, it sounds very strange, but that it eventually
sounds kind of like, it sounds kind of like Bug kind of did that. Like, right.
Bug kind of did, but I think they were trying to ground this and make it more like real in a way.
Yeah.
Which I'm not sure how well that would have worked, but there was at least some of the TV stuff in there already, though. Like the idea of like TV remotes and TV related levels was already in the game at that point. But then they did another concept with a character called Rezul by Dan Ari or Ari, if I'm saying his name right. And he had his like video warriors, which were other characters made of TV static. And they built several worlds around that, including the graveyard art set, which is important because that is something that would make it into the final game. They also had like these like pseudo 3D rail chase games, kind of like where the screen would proceed into it's like sprite based, but it would proceed into the level, kind of like, I guess, you know, what is it? There are other games like Offworld Interceptor, right?
Right.
But it would have been done with sprites. And the idea was like Gex would be running into the screen, which is something Naughty Dog would do years later with Crash Bandicoot, right?
Sort of like the G.I. Joe arcade game or Alligator Hunt.
I think that's what they, I've not actually seen it. This is just what the lead programmers talked about. Mm. But it seems like that was the initial goal, was to have levels like that as well. But they kind of hit this roadblock where they realized like making art for a platform like 3DO was just more expensive and time consuming. Cause you know, like on a Super NES or a Genesis Mega Drive, you have, you know, a limited set of tiles you can fit in memory and you're kind of building the game levels from all these different tiles and assembling it that way. Whereas the 3DO didn't have like a normal tile based renderer. It had like the cell engine rather than like the tile and sprite acceleration. So they were actually working with like big bitmapped graphics and they could do a lot of bespoke artwork and like really complicated stuff visually. Even if it doesn't seem like a big jump up in terms of what they were doing art wise, it was. And it just took them a lot of time to make that stuff. And they didn't have enough people on the team. And they were not, despite them wanting to make a competitive like mascot platform game, it sounds like they couldn't get the staff they needed to do it. And when they did start to get artists in, they couldn't necessarily get the art done quickly enough, or the type of art that they needed didn't really work out that well. And it just seems like the game went into development hell, which continued for a long time with this was a huge crunch period, months of work. They missed launch dates. And you got to think they actually launched this thing in 1995. Which, you know, that's 2 years into the 3DO life cycle, but already it's on the precipice of death.
Yep. It sure took a while.
It is interesting, though, that Evan Wells did work on this game.
Oh.
Which, you know, he went on to be a big guy at Naughty Dog. But he was involved with Gex as well. So there's a lot, there's definitely some interesting origins here. But in the end, obviously, they did eventually get the game out. It came to market. And, you know, as we know, the rest is history. It wasn't necessarily a huge deal, but it was still well-respected enough.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, people took note of it. That's the big thing, I think.
They did.
Maybe not so much in the UK. I imagine in the UK it was just met with, 2D,
But
you know, I think it's too early for that.
Yeah, I still think it was at a time when 2D was well-respected enough, and this idea of having all the voiced lines and, like, you know, the CD-quality sound and, like, the more complex art stuff, all of that was really impressive at the time.
Yeah.
The final thing, though, I wanted to mention, at the end of this blog here, he mentions a little anecdote about how at the end of one of the levels, they had this section where... Oh, yeah. So at the end of a Kung Fu level, there's parts they had to remove because they were buggy, and they had to remove them rather than shipping them with the game. And apparently one of the developers put in this message that said something like, "Didn't you think this level had some cool shit in it? This level was cut because the company didn't put you, the customer, first, but just wanted to make money. Call Madeline Canepa at this number and give her a piece of your mind and my mind too."
Wow.
It didn't have a real phone number though, but like a playtester apparently found the message and pointed out that the publisher, which was Matsushita or Panasonic, probably wouldn't have taken kindly to it given that they were going to bundle it with the 3DO in certain countries.
Yeah.
So the designer got fired over that.
I mean, to be honest, you can't really blame them, can you?
No.
Jesus Christ. You got to hide that stuff better, guy.
That was not a smart move.
If you want to put something like that in, you got to do something like Wild Woody. You got to have the topless lady really well hidden. Like you can't stumble across that shit.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, you're right. You pointed out, but there was still this culture back then of hiding stuff in games, which is a lot less common these days for obvious reasons.
But it's a pity.
Yeah. Well, because it gets patched out. Like they put that reference to it to Karine VTuber in Doom Eternal, and then they immediately got patched out.
So, if I may just interject one small anecdote about that, because it's so good, not else. So, I knew this artist guy a long time ago, who went to a certain company making games, and he made textures for that game. And since he is a guy and an artist in the games industry, he put in lots of dicks into this texture, which you could not see because of the resolution.
Oh no!
Then, a couple of years later, they made an HD patch, some sort of thing, for better resolution. All of a sudden, everybody could see all of the dicks he hit in there.
Jesus!
So yeah, hidden stuff in games. There you go.
Lovely.
I think my favorite example of that wasn't it Streets of Sim City? There was like some I can't remember what it was, but it just like everyone is just like a really like buff sort of swimsuit guy or something. I can't remember what it was, but it was triggered like really remarkably easily.
That's hilarious.
Yeah,
I love that game.
But yeah.
So this
is a game. Something that I read. I mean, according to the retro gamer history of this game, like when it began, because it was sort of began like late 92 development and didn't come out till 95. But when it began, like Donkey Kong Country wasn't a thing,
right? That's true.
And the artists, I forget the Suzanne something you said. I think it was. Wanted to do the pre-rendered graphics. She wanted to like render Gex, and the team was kind of like, no, we're not doing that. Like, we're not going that direction. And then it was one of those things where he forced to concede later, like, okay, like now we'll do that because Donkey Kong Country did it.
I think they actually found a nice balance there though, because they did use some rendered character stuff, but the actual backgrounds are still like more pixel art style, right?
I think it's interesting that you mentioned it becoming development hell, because I do think that the difference in the art style throughout the game kind of reflects that in a way. I know to a point it's intended, because you're going to these different worlds with these different gimmicks, but it doesn't gel that well, I don't think. Like, some areas look like they're just out of a different game entirely, and it's a little bit jarring. I don't dislike it. I think it's actually quite effective in a way, but... It's not a very coherent game visually,
actually,
I don't think.
So maybe we should actually, now that it's out, you know, in regards to this podcast, let's talk about what the game actually is about and
how it's structured. Sure. Yeah.
So,
well, I mean, this game's a pretty traditional 2D platform game where you go around sort of worlds in maps collecting remote controls that let you turn on different televisions that you can then jump into, and each television is a different level hiding another remote control or two, most likely. But they sort of designed the character moves first and then sort of worked backwards. So it's a very, because you could climb walls and ceilings and things, that's one of the reasons ended up being a gecko. Because a lot of this game is about crawling around and slurping things up with your gecko tongue and, you know, tail whipping things like real geckos do all the time.
You're right. That's the basic structure. And it's like, it all deals with Gex, like during an intro cinematic being like sucked into a television world.
Because he's obsessed with television because he's depressed because his father died. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, it's pretty messed up.
It sure is, yeah.
Imagine that in Mario. Just like, hey, Luigi, like, Mario, we must save the Mushroom Kingdom. And Mario's just like, I don't know, I'm still grieving.
But, that sets him up for, like, being one of those, like, pop culture guys that just knows all these, like, one-liners, which
you hear a lot of. Yeah, hilarious one-liners. I mean, you'd think they'd learn from Bubsy, but nobody learns anything, do they?
Yeah, but the difference is this game came on CD, right? So that meant he could they could play these clips constantly, and there was a lot of voiceover lines. A
couple of hundred, right?
Yeah, there's a ton, and they're all unique per world, right? So it actually does change as you progress.
There are some generic ones, but most of them are, yeah.
So, yes, the way you set it up, then, it is just basically like a traditional platformer thing where you have this, like, an overworld, which is like this TV world, and then within that, there's like the five different worlds you can go to, the subworlds. Yeah. And within each subworld, you have to find remotes in the levels to unlock new levels, and then eventually the boss. And levels are, it's traditional platforming, but there's a lot of different sort of things that get mixed up in there in terms, especially with the climbing, because it's not just climbing on ceilings, walls, etc. They also have you climbing on like the back wall, so like into the scenery.
Yeah.
And they do a lot of trickery with that. Like there's some levels that are extremely vertical where you're like making your way up to the top, and it relies heavily on the system, right?
Yeah. It's got that kind of I don't want to say like Pitfall the Mayan Adventure style, because I think it's a little bit more linear than that. But
it's
I remember them talking about them wanting to do a kind of a Japanese style level design where it teaches you the game mechanics through play rather than tutorials. But then in the game, there are in fact tutorials. So,
but the thing is, I think it does feel closer to a Japanese game than to one of the European platformers.
Yeah,
because the levels are more straightforward and less
the,
as they call it, which I learned from you guys, less airplane hangar.
I mean, there are like warp zones hidden, which is cool, which are fun to find, well hidden secrets and things. I like the way they integrate the theming with the level design. Like, just to use the graveyard stage as an example, because it's the first one. The way that you've got sort of the guillotines all over the place, almost straight out of like Ghouls and Ghosts. You've got the skeletons in the coffins popping in and out, and all of the enemies change in each world as well. I don't think there are any sort of generic enemies. Maybe the flying TVs, but that's about it. But it's a nice way of creating a sense of variety, and even within the different worlds, the levels do feel quite distinctive, I find.
Yeah, I think that's actually one of its biggest strengths, is like the art style and the feeling of the levels is so different. Like you said, you start in that graveyard world, but then you end up in like Toontown, which is a cartoon themed area with these checkerboard backgrounds. And then you go to like a Japanese garden style area.
Yeah. I gotta say, I don't remember that stage very well, but would it be, I bet some of the wisecracks in that haven't aged very well. I bet there's some racist stuff in there.
Somebody said that recently, and I actually looked it up, and there is somebody assembled all of Gex's lines into a database.
Right.
And I found that today when I was researching,
And I found that most of them are fairly innocuous.
They're not as
bad as I thought they could be. They could have been so much worse.
Okay, that's good to hear. I'm glad that Gex isn't bigoted.
But we haven't even mentioned, I guess, the fact that Gex is voiced by Dana Gould, right? Like, that's kind of one of the big things. They actually got an actual comedian to do the voiceover. Yeah.
Dana Gould, best known for appearing in live action in that one episode of Family Guy where Brian Griffin debates his book on the television.
Yeah.
Also, I think he was a Simpsons writer. Not as writer. At that point. He was a Simpsons writer, but not when it was particularly good, unfortunately.
Right, right.
But not when it was particularly terrible either.
I agree. And I would say his voice acting in the game is actually quite entertaining. It's yeah. not bad. Like
I don't have a problem with it at all. It's not his fault that they repeat lines so often.
Like, no,
exactly. I think he does an okay job. And some of the lines are kind of lame, but his delivery is about as good as you could expect. And it's nice that in the US, at least, there's a consistency in his voice acting because that is not the case in the UK, as we'll get to.
Well, there is an interesting thing as well. So there's a Japanese version of this game.
Oh,
which,
yes.
Which I do have. And that... So the intro movie is dubbed into Japanese in that version by a different actor, I guess. But the game itself still has Dana Gould's lines, but by default, they're disabled. So you actually have to go to the options menu and say, turn on, you know, the Gex voice. So I guess it's like because they didn't dub over the in-game lines, I'm wondering if they're just kind of trying to sweep it under the rug, so to speak, by default.
So what you're saying is the Japanese version is objectively the best version of the game by default.
Potentially.
One
could argue that.
Though I'd like to hear them read some of those lines and try and translate those gags into Japanese localized gags. I would have thought that would have been quite interesting, actually. Yeah.
But I kind of want to get back to what Thomas, you said earlier about the level design, and that I do think when you look at American-made platforms of this era, if we look at all the regions, Japan, Europe, America, I think American-made platformers were far and away the weakest during the 16-bit era.
Well, what are we thinking? When we say American platformers, for example, what are we talking about?
Well, you
about
tell
here?
Me. Think how many really great American-made platformers can you think of?
Well, I mean, all I can think of is Pitfall and Earthworm Jim.
Right, but those came quite late.
Yes, they did. That's
I
true.
Like
beyond
them,
that, I don't
they
really
came very late.
It's hard to think beyond that. Which what I mean, because all I think of is Japanese games and you know Amiga games, and those are European.
So I mean. It's not brilliant, but there is Kid Chameleon from the States, for example, which isn't...
Oh, that's not brilliant at all.
It's not good at all.
As I said, it's still one of the better ones, I think.
Yeah, that's fair. So I agree with that, yeah. Normie's Beach Baby-Rama, is that American?
Green Dog as well.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, God,
Chakan.
Green Dog.
There's Chakan, of course.
Chakan the Forever Man.
Oh, God.
Yeah, that's horrendous.
Is so And there's also, there's Tasmania, of course.
Oh, okay, I've got nostalgia for it, but it's not good.
Yeah.
No, it's not.
Oh, jeez.
What was that? There's like...
Hey, wait a minute. Why do Americans always have a go at European games when they were putting out such shite? I'm furious now. How dare they insult our games?
You just discovered a thing, and I think they're going to take you away now.
I can't believe this.
I agree with you, Stu. I've always wondered that as well. They always have a go at these at the European and UK made games, but
and they were okay.
I mean, see me pretending that Mario 3 isn't better than every Spectrum game? No.
What about
the
X-Men games on Genesis?
X-Mutants.
Oh,
those are stinkers,
dude. There's so many like. That's Ocean. So that's
what about Fantasia? Did they do Fantasia?
Oh, that's French.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
There's a lot of bad European and UK games as well.
Don't get me wrong. But
just to mention that, John just found out this week, and that Chuck Rock is not terrible.
Yeah,
really.
I hate the character, but the gameplay is not as bad as I thought.
Okay, yep. we'll get into that in the Chuck Rock episode coming up.
Yep.
But the point is, like, you know, American-made platform games during the 16-bit and 8-bit era, I would say, are largely terrible. And I guess there was some stuff on the PC, like, you know, Apogee stuff. But even then, compared
because they had ambition, that's the difference. It's a shovelware.
There was interesting stuff from Apogee, but I would say their platform games were still generally much worse than what the best Japanese games were on consoles.
I don't think anyone would dispute that. I mean, I was playing Jill of the Jungle recently, and I was enjoying it for what it was, you know.
Yeah.
But compare that to, like, Mario 1 in 1985, and it can just fuck off, to be honest.
So that's my point. As you look at Gex, and, like, the quality of the design in Gex is so far ahead of most American-made platform games, especially for when it was being made, that I really have to, like, hand them, like, some serious credit there, because they made something that was pretty good.
mean, my only problem with it personally, and I don't want to get bogged down on it, is I do feel like Gex is a little bit slippery to control, but when you're not on a wall, but when you are on a wall, he's almost too sticky. But
he's very sticky, yeah.
The levels aren't ever seemingly designed to kill you with that. You know, you're never going to need to be like both quick and precise. Really, it's quite a slow paced game.
It's pretty hard, though, I would say.
it is pretty hard, but not... I mean, it's much harder if you're just running headlong into everything. It's not really meant... I don't think you're meant
you
to
You really
just
have
run
to play carefully, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But you have so many offensive options, I think, that it's kind of
offensive,
okay.
I like that.
Yeah, they're both offensive and offensive, so... Yeah.
But it's when you've got the tail bounce, you've got the tail swing, you can shoot, like, fireballs once you've got the upgrades and such.
So the thing is, when I played Gex for the first time, not too long ago, at John's Place on 3DO, I have no nostalgia for Gex whatever. And I think one of the first things I mentioned is, this feels pretty good, actually.
Yeah.
Didn't I? I think
it
that's
does.
What I said.
Yes, you did. You were surprised. Like, yeah. Oh, this feels pretty good. And I agree. It plays well. It feels like a good game. And I think it actually... It's fun to kind of joke about, but I think Gex 1 is actually decent.
Yeah, well, no, I would agree that it's decent. I'd say it was above average. I wouldn't put it much more than that. I think when I compare it to its sort of taking away from the 3DO a little bit and talking PS1 here and Saturn, when I compare it to its contemporaries on PS1 and Saturn, it's definitely better than quite a lot of those attempts at 2D platformers that you get there. Like, I really like, for example, Lomax, but it's probably better than Lomax.
Yeah. Lomax is gorgeous, but really annoying.
It has problems. It has problems.
And I love it. I mean, I'm biased because I had it as a kid, so I've got a lot of nostalgia for it, but it's not a great game by any means. It's better than, like obvious shit like, like Spider, or like Cheesy, or like.
Stu.
Yeah,
You know what this game was competing with on 3DO? Johnny Bazooka Tone. Have you played Johnny Bazooka Tone? That sucks.
I have tried so hard to like that game because I feel like I should because it's got so much of the things that I like about a game. But then you actually try and play it,
you can't.
And it's horrible.
It's horrendous.
It's horrifying.
It's garbage. So yes, this is dramatically better than that.
Yeah, agreed. Strongly agreed. Yeah.
But
yeah.
There is one caveat I think is worth mentioning. And this always kind of like shocked me is the fact that so this was designed as a 3DO showpiece and like a mascot for the platform, right? And then it comes out and it barely runs at 30 frames per second. It drops below that a lot. Like this is a 20 to 30 frames per second game, right? But it's a 2D platformer. Like 2D platformers on 16-bit machines are almost universally 60 frames per second.
Yeah, whether or not it's a big problem. Yeah.
Right? That 3DO? No, this 699. Well, it wasn't 699 when this game came out, but you know, this expensive machine with these supposed next generation tech capabilities couldn't even do this game at 60 FPS.
That's not good. The reason is
that, again, it ties back into the cell engine of the 3DO and the way the 3DO draws its graphics. It doesn't have the tile and sprite acceleration features of those consoles, right? So like drawing a large scrolling play field costs a lot more in terms of processing resources. And it was a similar problem that the 32X had.
Yeah.
Which is why platform game like the Pitfall, the Mine Adventure port to 3D or 32X, where like so the background's rendered by the Mega Drive, but the foreground is higher color and done by the 32X. And the background, the Mega Drive layer, it's still 60 FPS, but the foreground 32X is like 20 to 30 FPS at best.
That makes me so sad.
So basically, this generation of hardware, like this new stuff with the 3D capabilities, was basically made in a way where it was no longer well-suited to making a platform game.
Yeah.
So Crystal Dynamics was given a very difficult task here to do a scrolling platform game on the 3DO.
So it's a game that was designed to sell a console, but is better on every other console that it is ported to.
Correct.
Yep.
Good stuff. Well done.
So that was always one of those weird things. And I forgot about that until I revisited like 15 years ago when I purchased my own 3DO. And I was like, wait a minute, this runs bad.
But again, I pose this question now to the two of you, because I don't remember what it was for me back in the day. Did we notice these frame rates so much back then? You did?
I did.
Okay.
I wouldn't have if I'd only played that version. If I played both versions, I would be like, yeah, this one's way better. But
I
back in the day, I wasn't super Like, I mean, I definitely noticed when games ran differently to other games, but
I would have sat back then. Yeah, it feels a bit choppier than I'm used to, but I couldn't have put my finger on it. What was the big difference?
For sure, yeah. But nowadays, if I wanted to play Gex, there's no force on earth that would make me play the 3DO version over any of the others.
It's neat. Well, to be fair, though,
is there a top version for it? Is there like a version that is significantly better than the others?
So that's the weird thing. And every version has its own strengths and weaknesses.
Yes,
which is unexpected. The 3DO version actually has the best visuals. The background, the colors in the background, the way they do the shading and the sort of dithering, it's more detailed on 3DO. They actually sort of like reduced the color quality on the other platforms.
Yeah.
Which, so it ends up looking a little worse there. It's also missing a few special effects. Like when you would go into the portals, they would zoom the whole stage in on 3DO because it was just like, you know, like a 3D object kind of thing. On the other versions, they only scale the sprite. So it's actually kind of like they couldn't replicate that same effect. And the same with some of the power-ups. Like they do these really crazy like special effects on 3DO. And all the other versions, it's not nearly as impressive, especially like Saturn where it's all dithered and like low color looking.
So that's interesting because I wondered if some of the transparencies were different on like Saturn and PS1 because that's a very common thing.
Absolutely, they're different.
Yeah.
And on PS1, you also get some additional dithering because it's, you know, PS1.
Is this PS1? Yeah.
And then the
Windows, sorry, you're about to say.
Yeah, the Windows version, Windows 95. So the same guys that did the Pitfall and Earthworm Jim ports, I think, worked on this. And this is the version I played at home myself back in the day.
And this is the version you can still buy on GOG.com.
Yeah. Here's the thing. This one is based on the 3DO version in the sense that it runs at 30 frames per second.
Oh, for God's sake.
Just like that. So the PC technically kind of had the same issues in terms of targeting high frame rates for platform games back then. But, you know, when this launched, Pentiums were out there and it could have done better and it didn't. It's the same thing that happened with the PC port of Sonic 3D Blast, which also is 30 frames per second.
Well,
why I know all this, I can't tell you, but it's something I've been fascinated with. But if you want to play this game at 60, it's Saturn or PlayStation. And as a result, I do have to say, even though they look slightly worse, those versions do play much, much better.
Yeah.
The only real caveat here is that I think it's only the 3DO version has the save feature.
Right.
The others have passwords.
That's interesting. Because you have to collect like a videotape to save your game.
Correct.
That's odd. That's surprising. So that explains a lot because when I've played this game, I've only played the 3DO version once, and that was through emulation. And when I played it on PS1, which is how I've mostly played it, I found myself thinking, when do I get to save? I know I've got a tape, but why can't I save the game?
The way it works there is when you get those tapes, after you clear the level, it'll show like the spine of the tape, and there's a password written on it.
Yeah.
And that's how you save. You basically write down the password.
Interesting. Okay, well, that explains
a lot. It's diegetic in a way. Wow.
Yeah.
Right, but on 3DO, are they like inserted into like a virtual tape machine and you just like save from there?
That's really unusual that they wouldn't retain that feature, but I don't know. Wow, weird.
Another interesting thing that, Thomas, you also saw over here was Crystal Dynamics did a 3DO port of Samurai Showdown.
Mm, yep.
And that one also runs at a lower frame rate than the Neo Geo, but it does retain like the full high-res assets, and it looks very comparable to that version, and even has like
really good in stills. Yeah,
the camera zooming in and out, all of it's there. It just runs slower. So like they were one of the few developers that were also doing 2D graphics on 3DO in a pretty decent way.
So I got to ask, it's a little bit off topic, and I apologize, but like, does the 3DO have any like killer apps? Like, is there like a banger game for the 3DO that's worth buying a 3DO for?
A lot of the stuff was ported, right? But I think games like the original, 1994 version of Road Rash is a killer app.
Yes, of course. Yes. I forgot about that. Yeah, no, I have to agree with that one. Yeah, because the PS1 version is not as good.
But, John, why would you talk about Road Rash now? I don't understand.
Oh, because I just did a 2-hour retrospective on it on DF Retro. Ooh.
Oh, my.
Wow. Oh, how about isn't that, that only accessible to patrons at the moment?
Yeah, but it will. It is currently. It'll eventually go public, but it is currently.
Don't say that. Don't say that. Oh, no one's going to subscribe.
Man, we are giving you such a nice.
I don't know when this episode's going to go live.
It's going to be a while. It'll
2025.
Yeah. I mean, so, I'm really looking forward to seeing that one, I have to say.
There's also some other killer apps. It got a port of Super Street Fighter 2.
Oh, that, I heard about
this.
That
is really good, yeah.
It's stunningly good. Like, when it released, it was extremely close to the arcade in many ways, and it had an arranged CD audio soundtrack and, like, super quick loading.
Wow.
So, like, it's actually, like, an awesome version of that game. Stuff like Return Fire was really good. Killing Time, PO'd, I actually like.
Killing Time.
Isn't there a bit of good Wing Commander on there?
Yeah, Wing Commander 3 got an excellent port.
I'm sorry, but I'm challenging Killing Time as being a killer app for anything. I've played that game.
It's not actually a killer app, but it's
I'm not having that. Okay, fair enough. I'll accept that it's interesting.
I like
I offer D, by the way.
Oh, yeah. D. Oh. Kenji Eno.
Okay.
That's cool.
Uncut, of course.
So, and then, you know, there was games like Police Knots came to the 3DO.
Oh, wow.
Which was really cool. And there was a bunch of Japanese exclusive stuff. There's
Lucian's Quest is quite interesting.
Lucian's Quest is pretty good. There's a Sailor Moon fighting game on there that's like 2D pixel art. That's pretty good.
Wow, the 3DO kicks ass. I had no idea.
The Japanese liked it quite a bit for some reason.
Yeah, it was popular.
Yeah, I heard that. Yeah, yeah. Did they get ports of any sort of the light Laserdisc games and things like that?
I think so. Like Mad Dog McCree, I think, is on there.
Well, not like Time Gal or the Taito stuff that's coming out on Switch soon.
We'll check in Tokyo in September. It's going to be awesome.
So, yeah. You know, the 3DO, it's not necessarily an amazing machine these days, but it's cool and interesting to experience.
Are they expensive to buy now?
They're not that bad.
I think quite cheap, actually.
The key with 3DO is that there is no copy protection.
Yeah, so, I was about to ask about that.
Yeah,
can you just burn games to a CD?
You can burn games to a CD and then break
only
the CD
for
after
24 hours. Yeah,
for 24 hours, yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty much that's the Gex release stuff. You know, came to 3DO, did okay for them, but then ended up getting ported to other platforms. And that's kind of where the franchise really started to take off, I suppose.
Yeah, and it must have made an impression on, PlayStation.
Absolutely.
Because 1998, which is later than I thought, actually, he came back, which would be, I want to say, 2 years after the PS1 version of Gex. Enter the Gecko comes around, and Gex Enter the Gecko, of course, the sequel, moves to 3D platformer, which at this point on the PlayStation is still relatively elusive, or at least in terms of being true 3D or like proper sort of full 3D. But now I have read that this is the first full 3D camera PS1 platformer. That seems unlikely. Is it different?
No, it's not. I mean, there's obviously Bubsy 3D.
Oh, of course. Bubsy 3D. Yeah. How can forget?
Say what you will, but it is a 3D platformer with a free roaming design. Yeah. I would also put out something like, I don't know, Jumping Flash. Even though it's first person, it's still kind of a platform game.
Yeah, yeah.
But this, you know, the thing is by 98, this wasn't even the only... I guess you could say Crystal Dynamics has done a bunch of other stuff between Gex and Enter the Gecko, including they made two games called Pandemonium. So Pandemonium 2, which are 2D platform games, but they use 3D graphics. So it's like the camera moves around.
They were
3D.
Big back in the day.
Yeah, they were popular. And they even got Japanese version. The Japanese version is called Magical Hoppers and has an anime redesign.
I mean, I'm not disrespecting Pandemonium, but when I go back to Pandemonium and I play it, which I have done relatively recently, and then I hear that those games were popular, which I know they were.
They were.
I think about how different things were. Like,
oh, I know.
That a game like that could take off, because, like,
I mean, wow. I mean, we'll get there when we talk about how GAG 3D plays, because it feels a bit dated nowadays.
Indeed, and you know, most developers.
I hate saying that, but yeah, it's.
I think that's why I'm mentioning their other games as well. It's like they, this was this time of experimentation, like figuring out how to do movement with 3D polygons with characters, like vehicle stuff. Crystal Dynamics was doing that for years, right? But actual 3D character movement was still new to them and new to many other developers. And I think they did okay in the grand scheme of things. Like when you look at the whole library of early 3D games, but it's definitely kind of rough. But obviously Gex Enter the Gecko, being that it's January 98, I feel like this is a game where they looked at the success of Mario and they're like, yeah, well, for sure. we want to do that, but with Gex.
And I mean, if you compare now stuff like Pandemonium and Klonoa, this is such a difference.
I think that Deep Cover Gecko is Enter the Gecko. I always get them mixed up because they have such similar names.
Yep.
Enter the Gecko. I think it's actually aged better than quite a lot of PS1 3D platformers because the visuals are so stylized. The way that this game feels to me when I control it is that it was designed around the D-pad, the digital controller, rather than the analog sticks, which you can use with it.
Oh, yeah.
But they don't quite feel right, I don't think.
Yep.
No, they don't.
It's like trying to play Crash Bandicoot 1 with anything other than the D-pad. It's just weird.
So it feels like this to me. You have the velocity on the analog sticks, so you can walk slowly and faster, but you only have 8 directions still. So this is why I think it feels weird.
Oh, really? Okay.
It's very rigid in that regard.
I didn't realize that. I mean, the Deep Cover is definitely better for it in that respect, but the fact that this game is quite rigid, I think, almost assists it, because it means that you can't really get, like... It's all very precise, you know, the controls. And the levels aren't particularly big, but they are quite dense with things, like with objects, with collectibles, with like platformers and enemies and things. So I never found myself like, you're just running in empty space. There's always something going on to engage you. I think this is actually a pretty good game, in my opinion. I think this and the next one are pretty good, but this one, like... I felt it held up reasonably well. I enjoyed playing it because it really did kind of just feel like playing a 16-bit game, but translated into sort of into 3D in a way that retains the playability of a 2D platformer, I think.
Well, what I found difficult, though, was orientation in the levels, because they are quite big. They are, in many cases, separate into several rooms, and... I never really knew where I am right now, and of course the camera also adds to that.
Yeah, I think that's true, but at the same time, that doesn't really hinder you much in the goals, because they're all, like, if it's like get 3 of these things, they're usually all in the same area. The only ones that become real troublesome, I would say, are the ones where you do need to get, like, every single collectible. And I can't recall if this game actually has that or not. I know that Deep Cover Gecko has get 100 fly coins as one of the remotes, but... Enter the Gecko, I don't know if it does that, because you'll get one-ups as you collect the items, you know, and I think that's what they're for. But I thought that Enter the Gecko held together reasonably well. It is dated, definitely, but compared to games, contemporary games like I keep swearing because I hate this game so much, Rascal, I don't know if you've played that one, stinking. But games like that, and Cheesy and other contemporary 3D platformers on the... I guess the closest would be Croc, because they're both reptilian 3D platform games. But, I mean, Croc is fun, but Croc is, like, baby's first, like, game, you know. Croc is basic as hell, and Gex is a little bit more sophisticated, but it's dated. I can't disagree with that.
Yeah, although it does... Again, this kind of ties into, like, having the different worlds and themes again, right? And each one is kind of broken up into chunks. And while I do think, Thomas, you're right that it can be kind of disorienting at first, the areas are fairly small to the point where I feel like you can get your bearings pretty quickly. It's just that initial entry into a stage where you kind of feel like, what's going on here?
It feels the stages feel to me like Because they're kind of like this wide linear kind of thing, they almost feel like Crash Bandicoot stages that just happen to have a couple of alternate routes you can take.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Because, like, especially in the early game, like, obviously the Toontown might as well be a Crash Bandicoot stage, except there's one bit where you're just in a side area, which you are very, very clearly signposted, where you drop in and then suddenly you're in a Looney Tunes pastiche and you're Bugs Bunny,
actually,
basically.
Thinking of that, you're right. It has, like, Elmer Fudd in there, basically the equivalent. And that's...
Oh, yeah.
So they really lean into that into this game because it's pretty much all, like, film references. Like, I think the second area is called, like, Smell Razor.
It is, yeah.
And there's, like...
It's like a Dracula Castle kind of place.
Yeah. There's like a Honey, I Shrunk the Gecko stage, Poltergex, stuff like that. Samurai Night Fever. But I think my favorite is that one of the levels is called, like, I think it's www.com.com, which, like, is, like, so perfect for when this released.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
I mean, this is the way the game is dated outside of its feel. Like, this is, like, the game is... this one is a bit more generic, but when we get to Deep Cover, we'll see a lot more, like, oh boy, like, real, like, dated 90s, 2000s sort of stuff. But I think this one is still worth a go. I mean, I played it relatively for the first, because I played Deep Cover Gecko first and the most, so I never really felt the need to go back. But I did go through this on the Vita quite recently, and I felt really good on the Vita, I have to say. I had a lot of fun playing it on that thing, because they re-released all of the Gex games on the PSN, and I think you can actually still go and buy them if you have a PS3 setup, so that's kind of nice. But... you know, that's not necessary anymore because they're coming out through limited runs. So let's go.
True. I will say they made some pretty smart decisions on the tech side with how they present Gex. Like, doing a four-legged creature that's very well animated in a 3D space, that was pretty tricky for the time. But one of the things that they did with this character is that he's primarily, like, flat shaded. They don't use a lot of textures on Gex, which was kind of like the Achilles heel of PlayStation, right? Because you get close to a texture, it warps with affine texture swimming. But Gex himself is just, like, uses, like, vertex painting and, like, colors, basically. So he's just, like, flat polygon shapes with colors, except for maybe on his back there's some texture work. But as a result, like, even today, like, his character model just, like, looks good.
Yeah, but it's that angular kind of a cartoony look to him. And does that help when they're reskinning him for, like, the different stages when he gets different outfits and stuff?
Yeah, I'm sure it does. But it also means that even when the camera gets close to him, he doesn't look like a mess of pixels. Like,
no.
His model looks clean.
In general, it was a big deal in terms of tech that the way Gex was created as a character with bones and skin and everything, which was not usual back then.
That's right. He had a full skeleton system.
Yeah.
Which, you know, creating skeletons for 3D models was something that would become kind of the norm. I think Half-Life did it as well in 98. And it was very important towards advancing, like, animation in 3D. But in 98, it was extremely new. And Gex did, in fact, have a full skeleton system for Gex.
And the show knew how to hype that fact as well, because I still recall that from the article from back the day that I read. So that everybody... mentioned that explicitly. Yeah, he has a skeleton system now. That's high tech. That's awesome.
I can imagine me reading that at the time as a kid and being like, wow, I don't understand what that means at all, but it's awesome.
That's how they went with it. But I actually do think that this game is technically very impressive for PlayStation, especially because, you know, the PS1 didn't have many games with these large open spaces. Like, obviously, stuff like Spyro would come along later and one up this, I would say. But, you know, the N64 was kind of where it was at for larger scale platformers. And Gex comes in with these big environments. They're relatively free of, like, warping textures, and they look pretty solid. The frame rate is very stable, or mostly stable, on PlayStation. And it just looks and feels pretty good. But it also got ported around to other platforms. So I think the main ones are PC, which I played, and then N64. And I always thought it was odd that the N64 version ended up being significantly worse.
But I mean, isn't it always the case when you port to another system, even if it's theoretically superior?
I know.
I mean, the game is just really tailored to the PlayStation.
You're totally right. It's just, man, when you actually see... I think that what might be the issue is that... So on PlayStation, developers had to use a lot more triangles to, like, sort of solve the warping texture issue. Because when you have a large surface with just, like, a very few triangles, it really makes the affine texture swim, like, super visible. So they would almost, like, tessellate the environments as it gets close to the camera. N64 was less capable of geometry, but you could do like, you could have very few triangles, but it would be perfectly perspective correct and clean looking, which is what, you know, Mario did.
Is that why Ocarina of Time only has those three triangles? That's a classic jape from Stuart Chip there. Dear Retronauts, the host is the worst thing about this episode. Please eliminate him. Thank you.
No, the host is the best.
Thank you. Thank you. You're wrong, but thank you. Now, I mean, removing voices from a Gex game isn't really a bad thing, I would argue, like, necessarily, but it does remove a lot of the character from the proceedings if the N64 version is...
If you've got
fewer voice clips, but they're just looped a lot more, that would be quite bad.
Actually, yeah, I think that's kind of what happens. Yeah. There's just less voice lines. But
there was an exclusive level in the N64 version called Gax Costo or something, like an underwater level. And it was almost worth it because Gex, GECQUES, is really funny. Like, I got to give him props for that. But, you know, the trade-off is you lose six other levels, but you gain this shitty water level. So well done.
Well done.
Yeah. And, of course, Dana Gould returns in the US. But in the UK, I have to mention this, they changed the voice to Leslie Phillips, who's this Carry On movies, Doctor in the House sort of actor, which means that Gex sort of sounds like... ding dong, it's tail time. And it's like, that's not, he doesn't even look like he would sound like that at all, you know? It's bizarre, really bizarre.
I mean, and that is again one thing I never expected to hear in Retronauts podcast, mention of the Carry On movies.
Yeah
So way to go.
Thank you.
I have never heard the UK version. I did not realize that this was the case.
When I emulated this game, when I emulated Deep Cover Gecko as well, actually, I started playing it, and as soon as Gex spoke, I was like, oh, no, wrong. That's not, no disrespect to Dana Gould, but that's not what I grew up listening to. I can't have that. So I had to go and find the PAL version and emulate that instead. I will take the speed hit because I want to hear the correct voices, you know. What someone needs to do is they need to dub in those versions to the NTSC version. But, I mean, I've got my fingers crossed, and I know it's not going to happen, that when, because I don't blame them either, it's not worth the money, but when Limited Run does do like Deep Cover Gecko, I'm just like, God, please have Danny John Jules as an option. Like, I know they won't.
That would be an awesome thing, to be honest, for them
you
to do.
Say
it
that,
would be so God. Cool, but it seems like it would cost money that maybe they don't want to spend, and I don't blame them.
I feel like that's the kind of thing that they actually do try to pull off there.
Right. I mean, if they,
but you're right. It could be a money thing. It might not be feasible.
If we get a Gex collection, which has not only all three games, but both voice tracks for each game, all three voice tracks in the case of the Enter the Gecko, I will be in hog heaven. Yes, I will. But if it comes out and it's just Dana Gould, I will be completely fine with that. I will understand.
Yeah.
But it will hurt.
Speaking of which...
It would be awesome.
That Japanese version, published by Bandai, have you seen that? It's called a Spin Tail.
I haven't, but I've seen the box art, which is really ridiculous.
Incredible. It's so good.
It's worth seeing.
It's a really interesting release, and it's much better than... So the 3DO Japanese version has a great cover, but have you seen the Sega Saturn version of Gex, the Japanese Saturn version?
No, I'm going to go look this up right now.
The cover art, I don't know what happened, but it just... It completely broke apart.
Okay, let's see this. Oh, Jesus, what the... What's happened to him?
I don't know.
That's...
I mean, you wouldn't expect this, like, weird, distorted 3D render of Gex to appear on official box art, but it did.
That's really horrible.
Yeah, it's bad. It's real bad.
Oh, boy. That's upset me.
But, yeah, so Gex Enter the Gecko. I also, as I mentioned earlier, I played this game first on the PC.
Yeah.
It was a game that ran on, it worked, you know, I played on my 3DFX Voodoo 1 card.
Right.
And at the time, I remember quite liking it and thinking it was rather impressive because, like I said, I was looking for 3D platform experiences on the PC as well.
Yeah.
And this one kind of scratched that itch, and it looked really nice and clean, higher resolution than the console versions, you know, smooth filtered textures. It was just good all around. And because the game has that slightly jerky 8-way movement, it actually plays well with a keyboard.
Yeah.
Like, you don't need an analog stick, which I did not have on the PC back then. I'm not even sure there were many options for that.
I mean, I find this game quite hard to imagine playing it on the keyboard, but then again, I managed it with almost everything else. So
you'd be fine.
No doubt. I mean, it's, as I said earlier, I don't know why I had a problem with that. It's a pretty linear digital kind of game. So yeah, I think it would be okay. Maybe if I was not hearing Leslie Phillips' voice, it might throw me off again, but I don't really know. I remember this game being criticized in, I think, PC Gamer magazine as being basically unplayable because unless you had the specific graphics card, it wouldn't even boot. But that seems unlikely to me. I think that was just John Walcomit being pissy, well, as usual.
I don't remember. This might have been one of those games that actually required a Voodoo card.
That's what I remember reading. But
I got it with my Voodoo card, right?
Yeah, so. Yeah. It was this and like one other game, I think, and I can't remember what the other one was, to be honest.
I see that it did come out on the PC as well in Europe, so I wonder if there is like a UK version with the voice acting.
Maybe. Then again, there's always mods, the huge mod scene for Get Sands.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So I want to mention one last thing for Enter the Gecko. I really like that jump kick he does. It just
it's awesome.
One of these moves that really feels just nice to pull off. It's very easy. It covers a lot of ground, and it's just a cool thing.
Yeah, in Deep Cover Gecko, which I guess we'll move on to now, there's a reasonably long and quite extensive tutorial at the beginning, which I don't think that Enter the Gecko has, where it teaches you all the practicalities of, like it teaches you how to use the jump kick to cover, like, long jumps and things. It's like, it's the Gex's version of the long jump, basically. But I really like I like Deep Cover Gecko a lot, 1999's game, the direct sequel to Enter the Gecko, and it's really just the same exact game again, but with even better graphics, and I would say slightly more polished level design.
You can tell that they're learning a lot at this point.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like by 1999, Crystal Dynamics in general had evolved a lot, I think. And they were doing, I think they came out around the same time, I suppose. Well, I guess it was a little bit later, but they also did Legacy of Kain Soul Reaver at that same year in 99, which was absolutely incredible, both from a gameplay and technical point of view. And I feel like Gex 3 also benefits from some of their learnings on the technology side.
I have to say, I noticed when you were talking about Rezol in the original Gex, that Rezil is also the name of the character from Soul Reaver. So God knows what happened there.
Raziel, I guess.
Yeah. But Rez is the villain from Gex, right? Rez is like the evil chap.
This metal gecko lizard.
Yeah, he looks like a xenomorph.
Crystal Dynamics did publish the original Blood Omen Legacy of Kain, but they didn't make it. But they did make Soul Reaver. So that whole weird, I don't know, it's bizarre. Yeah. But there's definitely something with those names.
I mean, the Legacy of Kain is a series that has absolutely gone in a memory hole for a lot of people, I think. It's like, it was around for PS1 and PS2, and there were quite a few games, and then now it's just gone. I think there was a PS3 or PS4 one that was being made, but then it got cancelled. Anyway, that's another episode. Deep Cover Gecko, like, look, I've got to address the elephant in the room, and I'm sorry about this. I know this is crass, but I have to talk about it, okay?
Please do.
In the story for this game, Gex is like, he wants to have sex with a human woman.
Oh, so it's like Sonic 2006.
Yes, first. It is. Except Sonic doesn't talk about getting his dick out all the time. And Gex does. Like, the opening cutscene, he's like sexually harassing Agent Extra over VidCom. And Agent Extra is this model actress, Marlies Andrada or something is her name. She was in Baywatch, I guess. But she's... I think they use other actresses for sort of other regions. They'd like just use different live-action footage. Which is quite funny to think of, but there's just something about Gex openly like lusting after human women that I find uncomfortable.
Is this it, to me? It always felt like an influence from like the popularity of Austin Powers or something.
Yeah,
like trying quite to spoof likely, that, yeah.
But with Gex.
But I know that there was a PlayStation magazine, I think it was Station, where the render for the cover was this actress topless, but they'd got a render of Gex standing behind her with his gecko hands on her.
That was an ad in Germany, I think.
Yeah, that was an ad.
And it's just kind of like, really, Gex is getting more than me? Like, really? Like, this gecko is not even real? It was just depressing.
I mean, it was the late 90s. What are you going to do?
Yeah. But that's not detract from the fact that this game, despite being quite retrograde in some respects, is honestly really good. Like, it holds up to me really rather well. The levels based around different sort of genres still are quite a lot more diverse, and the costume changes are more frequent. The collectibles are kind of off the chain in this one. Like, not only are there tons of different collectibles, but they make a succession of really truly obnoxious noises when you collect them. This is a game that to me feels like the aim is to give the player their money's worth in the sense of like cramming almost every little corner with hidden stuff and secrets. And like, I mean, that's kind of the thing for this whole series. We didn't even mention that, like, the original Gex, it doesn't have a secret level. It has like an entire secret world full of secret levels, like 9 secret levels that you can only access if you've been like looking around pretty hard. And Deep Cover Gecko is the same. It's got secret levels. It's got bonus levels. It's got multiple playable characters. It's got poor coins, it's got bonus coins, it's got fly coins. Everything is you can interact with pretty much everything. Like, if you see some penguins having a skate into some penguins, you can just twat them with your tail and collect coins out of them. It's extremely packed with stuff to both its detriment and to its benefit. Cause it can feel a bit like, come on, exhausting, I think, at times. But, I mean, what do you make of this game? What do you two make of this game?
Thomas?
Well, I mean, what can I say? What I've played, it just feels like a refined Gex 2 to me. It's a nice game, and of course, at this time, we were already used to some better, more complex, more interesting stuff. But I think it's a nice cap off for the series.
I mean, this game also is quite heavy on the humor, because in Gex 2, there's quite a lot of humor, but in this one, almost everywhere you look, there's like sign gags, like Simpsons, like an old Simpsons episode. Like, just get signs everywhere with stupid jokes on them, or little gags, or little childish things like, in the snow level, like Santa's name written in like piss in the snow. There's gross stuff like that.
I mean, Gex always did that. I remember the intro of the second of Enter the Gecko, it starts pretty much with a fart joke.
Of course it does.
I want to say that one thing that they really did well is they refined the character movement.
Yes.
And specifically so in Enter the Gecko, you would go from standing still to full run, like in a single frame, right? You press a direction, he's instant full run. You just go. In this one, he has a very subtle like wind-up animation where he takes a few steps, and then he leans into and starts running. And it gives it a little bit more weight and sense of control to his movements that makes...
They've improved the analog controls as well, so I think they're actually true 3D now, or true analog, rather than...
I think it's because, like, you know, the DualShock had been around now for a while at this point, right? And, you know...
But for me, personally, and people will disagree, and I respect their opinions, I think with the Gex series, I honestly feel that there might be a case of whichever one you played first is your favorite.
Right.
But this is my favorite by far. I think it's the best one by far, but I respect... I mean, it's kind of a showcase for this series that anyone could say my favorite Gex is this one, and you don't really want to argue with them, because they're all pretty good, right? Like, it's a pretty strong series for what has become something of a punchline.
Yeah.
Is that not fair to say?
He doesn't deserve that as well.
No, I mean, compared to other series, like, for sure... I mean, I want to, at some point, I do want to do an episode that's like almost mopping up some of the stuff that doesn't deserve its own kind of episode. Because, I mean, I don't think Croc deserves its own episode, to be honest. And there are things I'd like to complain about. Although, having said that, the story of Croc's creation is quite interesting, so maybe it deserves its own episode.
Gosh, the it is fun to revisit these games today because it really kind of gives you an idea of what was hot at the time. Like, I think Absolutely. This has like a Sleepless in Seattle gig. It has like an Unsolved Mysteries level.
It has a boss battle with what's just Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Yeah.
Basically, yeah.
All right, it was like exactly the Attitude Era of WWF at the time. Yeah.
I mean, of course, you shouldn't just go in there and just expect the modern comfort of modern 3D platformer.
No.
But I when I did research for this episode now, I read some of the articles online, and some of them are almost, I wouldn't say hateful, but really, really quite miserable, I think.
I think there's...
it's a pity.
I mean, my understanding is when it dropped, it did okay. Like, it reviewed okay at the time.
Oh, in Germany, there were... reviewed very well back then. They were really, really hyped.
Because this game definitely got some magazine covers. I remember that render of him with the snowboard coming up quite a lot.
Yeah,
but I think, as you said about John, with the tech, I think that with Deep Cover Gecko, with Enter the Gecko, there's a lot of fog going on in that game. And that's okay. Yeah. Like, that, I get it.
It was normal back
in Deep Cover Gecko. They found if either they are much better at masking it or it's just not there, because this game, I like from the off, it throws you into this quite expansive space. And I think just like the way that they've managed to disguise the draw distance is much better, and it makes the whole game look more polished, and colorful as well. There's a lot more color in the game too. I don't even know what to say about this, because it really is just the same game again, but refined. And there's nothing wrong with that. I do like the creativity of it. Like, one of the earliest levels you go to is like a Sherlock Holmes, or maybe like a sort of drawing room, like mystery Miss Marple sort of a stage where you've got like the Deerstalker and you're like looking through a magnifying glass and stuff. And one area you find a stuffed bear that you then inexplicably shrink and go on its back. And then you're running around whipping the fleas or the ticks off of it. And it's such a... But then, like, after that, you come back to the normal size again. You go outside and you're in a hedge maze. And it's like, of course you're in a hedge maze, you know? And the creativity of that, I think, keeps the game feeling exciting and fresh. And even going to play it now, you have to respect the fact that they found new angles for all this stuff, you know?
Yeah, I think it's generally a very respectable game in every aspect.
But it was at a time, I think, when IDOS... which I don't think we mentioned it, but in 97, I think it was, IDOS acquired Crystal Dynamics. So they became a Crystal Dynamics studio. So this was like under the label of Tomb Raider and everything. And by 99, it was pretty obvious that they were kind of just pumping these games out each year.
Yeah.
And I feel like Gex 3 got a little bit lumped into like that kind of like, oh, they're just taking the Tomb Raider approach.
Yeah, good
again.
Point.
You know what I mean?
It's like, true. Yeah, I mean, and Gex was in like there was a brief period when he was being used in games like, I want to say Hot Shots Golf. He was a golfer in that game, and he's in Mad Dash Racing as well, I think.
Yep.
Yeah, that's right. What's really funny to me though is that I almost forgot about this, but are you guys familiar with the game director on this and Enter the Gecko?
The game director.
It's Glenn Schofield of Dead Space.
Oh, wow.
So,
okay.
This was one of, not his first. He'd been around for a while, actually, since 91, I think. But yeah, he worked as a game director on this. I think this was his first actual credit as a game director, in fact.
And Deep Cover Gecko, though, that was the last released Gex game, but there was another one being made that got cancelled, Gex Jr.
Oh yeah,
and that got leaked out as a proto for the PS1 in 2000. It was like a 2001 game. You can see it on YouTube. I think you can probably download it somewhere. And it's essentially the same exact thing, except Gex is a kid now and therefore more annoying.
Oh yeah.
And when I looked it up for this, one of the first things I saw is that one of Gex's moves now is to just do a huge fart.
Yeah, that tracks.
Animated, so disgusting. Like his like tail goes up and he's just like his whole body like vibrates from this gas coming out of his anus. And it's like, Jesus Christ.
That's why it was cancelled, I guess.
Yeah, you're damn right it was cancelled. I mean, it's not exactly Boogerman level, is it?
No.
I mean, at least Boogerman had the decency to not be that realistic.
That's true.
Imagine if that was your job. You had to render this gecko just like flatulence. You had to do that.
Well, I have to say I'd rather do the flatulence than the Mortal Kombat finishing moves, but that's just me.
Well, what about Boraicho's finishing moves, which are flatulence?
Worst of both worlds. All right, you win.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I think I do win, Thomas. I think you.
Yep. You got me there.
I feel like we need to chime in here and say that we've talked about these 3D games, but Gex did not stop there. There were portable versions of both of these games.
The Game Boy Color games, yes.
Mm. Which
very, very slight.
You might say, oh, it's a return to like the 3DO era, 2D side-scrolling Gex game. But then you look at it in motion, you're like, oh.
I'm very, very tolerant and reasonable with my games, and I will try to find the good in everything that I play. I really will. It's the basis of my extremely popular book, All Games Are Good. I can't with these games. I can't even, as the kids say, with these games. They are just... They feel like they only exist because of contractual obligation.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
They have
these are the games that give the Game Boy Color a bad name.
Yeah, they are they are very shovelware-ish, I would say. I do not recommend them at all. I might be wrong, but I think the first one is a cross... Like, I think it might be a Game Boy original compatible as well, but that might be total bullshit.
Ooh, I don't remember that.
But yeah, they're both pretty bad, banal platform games that don't even seem to really have designed levels so much as thrown together slapdash, like, big open plan areas that don't really work in 2D. I can't recommend them at all, but they did need mentioning.
I feel like it actually circles back to the discussion earlier about American-made platformers, because this feels like an American-made 6L 8-bit platformer, which is to say it's not very good. Even though I will say, technically speaking, like, it looks okay, like decent visuals for Game Boy Color, like fairly colorful and good sprites, but it's still it's just very uninspired. But it's it was made by David A. Palmer Productions, if you're familiar with them.
Yeah.
And actually, thinking about it, do you know if David A. Palmer Productions, if that's American or UK based? Because I always assume they were American, but I could be wrong. Maybe they're
No, they are UK based. They're from Sheffield.
Oh.
Bad.
Oh,
UK.
Dear.
Bad.
Oh, dear.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So that changes things.
They made some. Oh, my God. That's interesting. I was about to say it reminds me of the absolutely awful version of Pitfall Beyond the Jungle.
Oh, yeah, they made that.
On the Game Boy Color, but they totally made that shit too. And they made all the shit ones. They made Earthworm Jim, Menace to the Galaxy.
Oh,
and they made
horrendous.
Commander Keen on the Game Boy Color. All these awful.
And Men in Black 2, the series.
Yeah, yeah. Basically, all the games that you immediately think of when you think of bad, like, Game Boy Color platform, like licensed games, really. And that horrendous Tasmania game.
But they did, however, do that first port of Doom to the Game Boy Advance, which is
pretty good.
Pretty impressive for the platform.
Yeah, pretty good. And you know what? They did Speedy Gonzales on the Game Boy. Not bad.
Yeah. That's all right. The one that's always used as Sonic ROM hacks.
Yeah. And of course, the most important thing about Gex that I feel like we should mention personally is the fact that there is a novelization of Gex by Michael Teitelbaum, who wrote quite a lot of these things, I believe.
Just like Road Rash, then, which also has a novelization.
Was that the one that came with Sega Power magazine?
It was.
The UK? Oh, man.
I did a line reading in my newest video on that.
Oh, wait, that's awesome.
Voice.
That's awesome. Because I was thinking it might be a good way to end this, to do like a brief excerpt of the Gex novelization.
Do you have it? If you do.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now.
Well,
yeah.
I think amazing. That's the only way to end it.
Okay, well, let's... but first of all, do we have any final thoughts on Gex?
I like Gex. I think Gex is... It's fondly remembered for the lols and the memes these days, but I actually think that it was a legitimately good game for the time. Not amazing. It's very B tier, but I think these are solid platforms, and I especially think the original, given what the situation looked like with American made platforms at the time, they did an exceptionally good job with what they were working with, especially given how difficult development was.
Yeah.
I have a lot of respect for that original game, and I also think it was really important to the the history of Crystal Dynamics and them becoming a pretty powerful, well-known studio.
So what I find interesting about Gex is if you just compare the game, if you play them nowadays, and the reception they got back when they were released, because back in the 90s, late 90s, they were really, really featured, really, really high ratings in magazines. And if you play them nowadays, of course, it feels a bit clunky and a bit unwieldy, and the camera is all over the place. But I think if you can get into that mindset again, what games were like back then, I think it's really enjoyable, and it really, I think it's just admirable what they did with the PlayStation hardware that nobody else even attempted in many cases.
That's true.
Yeah, absolutely. And as I've hopefully made clear, I'm also a fan. I do like it. I like Deep Cover the best. I think it is the best, but that's a series that I think they did their best with it, and I think it shows, and I think it's an enjoyable game that's still fun to play now, today. And it baffles me that they never did another one, to be honest. It surprises me a little bit. Especially because mocking media never gets old. Like Netflix, for God's sake, the whole Netflix era, the whole streaming era, like it writes itself, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
I came up with this on Retronauts years ago. I said, here's my pitch for a new Gex game. Gex gets sucked into this new thing called ResFlix, where Rez is streaming himself across the entire media dimension. And you go through parodies of Stranger Things and Netflix.
And every level ends early because it's cancelled.
Yes, perfect.
Oh!
Here we go.
Oh.
Boom! We are sticking it to Netflix today. Oh my god.
Seriously. I mean, Square Enix, a while ago, they have this creator program, right, at Square Enix, where they also bring games like, what's it called, with that Ant Ninja guy you had a podcast about. Zool. They had Zool, for example, like that. So they are open for people pitching new Gex projects and doing Gex stuff. I think if you can convince them, it is possible to make a new Gex game.
Actually, he's not actually an ant. He's an alien ninja from the Nth Dimension.
Oh, yes, of course. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I mean, come on.
Come on, dude. What are you doing?
What I think is quite funny about that is the fact that when recently they announced the limited run, you know, the trilogy, it sort of showed that they've got rid of Tomb Raider, but they've retained Gex. Like, that's where they know where their money really is.
Yeah. That
is, wait, right. No, doesn't that mean that Square doesn't own Gex anymore at this point?
Maybe.
They do not.
Oh, dear.
It was sold off to Embracer, I think,
and,
right?
Of course, being with Embracer, the way it's very close to Limited Run Games.
Oh, yeah, so of course.
Everything comes together. Wonderful.
Thanks. So just before we do the kind of the where we can find you online, I'm going to just do this very quick reading from Gex. It's simply titled Gex. You know, it's just a one-word title. It's a very prestigious... It's like Lolita. It's like Gex.
Right, exactly.
excuse me. Now, I'm not well, so this may not be quite so good as I hope, but here we go. This is how it starts. And if you like this, you can pick up a copy of Gex by Michael Teitelbaum on eBay for far too much money, to be honest. We go back a long way, Rez and I. Oh, by the way, I'm Gex, short for Gecko Extraordinaire. Anyway, I've been fighting Rez for a long time, since way before I saw the report on TV News telling me that Rez had kidnapped my beautiful partner, Agent Extra, and pulled her into the media dimension. I'm going to have to go back there to rescue her. But I get ahead of myself. This will be my third trip into the media dimension. I just barely survived the first two tours, and now I've got to go back in. It's going to be Deja Ouch all over again. Good thing I've got my James Bond super spy tux, because believe me, in the media dimension, I get both shaken and stirred. But again, I get ahead of myself. I guess the best thing would be for me to start at the beginning, a long time ago, in a dimension far, far away. Luke, I am your Gecko. So I'm not reading any more of this shite. Oh, I'm sorry, that is drivel.
You went
that
a little bit too far there.
I'm not reading any more of this. That's absolute bollocks. Just forget it. No more. No, I can't remember. If Dave Bulmer was here, I'd make him read all of it, but he's not, so it's not happening. Don't buy a copy of that book. It's dreadful.
I don't know. That might be better than, you know, the Road Rash book. What's a rasher? I inquired cautiously. I wish I'd never asked.
I bet that was written by just like... I bet that was like written by just like Andy Smith, the editor of the
It was written by
magazine.
Neil West.
Neil West, yeah, just one of the reviewers. Amazing. That's absolutely incredible. You know, when I was a kid, I designed a Road Rash, like fighting fantasy style Road Rash Choose Your Own Adventure.
All right, I'm into that.
It's rad. If I ever dig it up, I'll probably scan it. Problem is, I don't know anything about bikes or like any, or road rash, so it's mostly just made up shit. But yeah, fun. So, John, where can our listeners find you on the internet as if they don't know already?
As usual, at DarkOneX on, I was going to say Twitter, but whatever it's called now. And of course, you know, doing videos in Digital Foundry, youtube.com/digitalfoundry, eurogamer.net/digitalfoundry, and we have a Patreon where, yeah, I mean that road rash video is pretty good, but
yeah,
if you want to see it in full and not chopped up into parts and you want to see it without ads, then you can go to the Patreon. It's there. It's like a, it's like film length, so please enjoy.
It's awesome. And Thomas, where can we find you, as if we don't know already?
So if you, for whatever reason, would want to find me online, you check at maniac.de for the magazine I'm writing for. Or if you want to find my personal comments on stuff, check X at Bimbo Fortuna.
There's no way of saying it without sounding contemptuous, is there?
It's hard.
Just check
it's X. Hard.
Blue Sky.
I don't know. What do they call it?
God. The only X that there's going to be is an exodus of users. Am I right?
I wonder if Exhibit's posting on there.
Yeah, maybe. Well, that's the end of that. If you like Retronauts, you like to support Retronauts, going to patreon.com/Retronauts, you can spend a mere $5 a month, which is literally nothing. And you'll get 2 completely exclusive full-length episodes per month, as well as early access, a week early access to every episode. So by the time all the kids in the playground are talking about the new episode, you'll have already seen it, and you'll be the coolest kid on the playground. You'll also get Diamond Fight's tremendous This Month in Retro columns, which are both in text form and in speaking form. And you can go on the Discord, and you can call me every single swear word there is, and I'm not allowed to retaliate, Jeremy said. So thank you very, very much for listening. And what's the best way to end a Gex... a Gex podcast, you think?
It is no longer tail time? I don't know.
I'm for a tail joke, yep.
Yeah, we've come to the tail end of our podcast. How's that?
Very nice.
Yeah. Yeah, it is no longer tail time. You no longer have to taste my tail. Thank you for listening. Don't think about that too hard.